Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Dude, Carl's Jr. Charbroiled Double Deals just popped up on my timeline. The California Classic Double, the Jalapeno Double, and the Double Cheeseburger, $2.49 each.
How'd they know?
The algorithm, dude.
Charbroiled Double Deals for $2.49 each. Only at Carl's Jr. Available for a limited time. Price and participation may vary. Price higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Tax not included.
Getting fit and staying healthy always sounds easier than done, right? OpenFit is bringing you something new that makes it even easier to never miss a sweat session. Lose the commute to the gym and let the workouts come to you. OpenFit takes all of the complexity out of losing weight and getting fit. It's a brand new, super simple streaming service that allows you to work out from the comfort of your living room in as little as 10 minutes a day. Everyone's bodies are different, and OpenFit gets that, which is why it's personalized to your needs with custom, tailored, original content. OpenFit classes are led by some of the most effective and engaging trainers in the world. Sculpt your body with Andrea Rogers, founder of the worldwide sensation Extend Bar, or get in crazy good shape with Hunter McIntyre, named by Sports Illustrated one of the top fittest athletes. These trainers know how to get you results quick. Forget all the complexity and stress around getting fit and just press play and work out on your schedule. 600 seconds with celebrity trainer Devin Wiggins packs the fat-burning, muscle-building, and body-sculpting benefits of much longer sessions into a fraction of that time. View it on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, and Roku. Lose up to 15 pounds in just 30 days. Flatten your abs, shape your body, and look and feel great. OpenFit has changed the way I work out, and with my code DIVORCED, you can join me on a fitness journey personalized just for you. Again, use my code DIVORCE and start using OpenFit for your journey to a healthier life. Right now, during the OpenFit 30-Day Challenge, my listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to OpenFit. You can lose up to 15 pounds in 30 days when you text DIVORCE, D-I-V-O-R-C-E, to 303030. You will get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts and nutrition information, totally free. Again, just text DIVORCE to 303030. Standard message and data rates may apply.
Hi there, it's Laura Wasser. And if anyone knows how much divorce sucks, it's me. I've been practicing family law for over 20 years, and I've worked on thousands of divorces. Creating peace in families is how I lost my voice. From the top of the food chain all the way down to my very first case, which was my own divorce when I was 25. I wrote the book on divorce, or I wrote a book on divorce. It's called It Doesn't Have to Be That Way, How to Divorce Without Destroying Your Family or Bankrupting Yourself. That book became a bestseller because it presented another option for ending a marriage, one that doesn't necessarily include lawyers, and one that leaves more money in both parties' bank accounts and less animosity in their hearts. We created It's Over Easy, the one-stop breakup divorce resource online with the same principles in mind. So welcome to the Divorce Sucks podcast, where we talk about breaking up, getting divorced, and moving on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning
to you.
Welcome to the Divorce Sucks podcast. I'm Laura Wasser, your host.
I'm Johnny Rains, the producer, writer, director, casting director, booking, and on-air talent that sits next to the host.
You do all that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And humble to boot.
Exactly. You've really moved on from plucky sidekick. Anyway, this is the Sunny Side Up Report, where Johnny and I pull things from the headlines and report them to you regarding marriage, divorce, and everything in between.
And moving on to your next chapter.
So we have from brides.com,
yes,
by Jen Glanz, 5 brides on what it felt like planning a second wedding after a nasty divorce. I like this one. One of them said, "It feels horrible. Didn't matter that I met my second husband 6 years after divorcing my terrible first husband. Our wedding felt horrible." Well, maybe I have a good idea for your Laurel, 45. Don't get married.
Exactly.
All right. Another one said,
"I'm going all out. My first wedding was just like my first marriage. A joke. We got married at the courthouse with just 15 friends and family members. We had no money, and honestly, we rushed into the marriage. We got divorced less than a year later, and it was so stressful because we didn't have any money. So we were fighting over the little we had because we both needed all we could get. Fast forward 10 years later, I'm about to marry the best guy ever who has a good job and a lot of cash in the bank. He's paying for me to have my dream wedding, and I'm going all out, giving myself what I deserve, a wedding that makes me feel like a princess. Rochelle B. 37.
That's nice. I like this one. The second time around is all rainbows and butterflies. What's there to worry about? My divorce ended after 6 warlike months battling over everything from our kids to our couch. When I entered my second marriage, I felt like I discovered how to frolic in the honeymoon-like state of mind for an extended amount of time.
Oh, and who doesn't like frolicking?
Nice. I still say, why do you need to do it more than once?
But before we move on, so the best one, back to your Laurel W. 45, she gives this sage advice. If I ever have to do this a third time, I'd skip the wedding and sign the marriage license in privacy.
There you go. This is from Yahoo. I think it came from somewhere else first, by Elise Soleil. Woman, 47, celebrates her divorce with a sexy photo shoot. Boy. And this kind of went a bit viral because I saw it a few times. My boyfriend sent it to me because he likes to keep me up to date on things and contribute. But Mary Lawls of Gray Court, South Carolina, has been separated from her husband for the last 3 years. But their divorce wasn't official until March 18th. While the 47-year-old is dating another man, she still wanted to somehow observe the end of her 13-year marriage. I thought about it for a few months, and I said to my brother's wife, who is a photographer, we should do a divorce diva photo shoot, Lolis tells Yahoo Lifestyle. So you can see these pictures online. She's got one of her walking down a long road. She's wearing bike shorts. A lot of people didn't like that. She looked
Those
on
are
Pinterest
coming back, you know.
For, I know, for visual aids, but she wasn't comfortable with the trendy trash the dress photos that brides have symbolically showed destroying their white wedding gowns. I wasn't angry. I was excited, she explains. After compiling photos of women in empowering poses, she asked friends on Facebook for wardrobes donations. So people loaned her clothes. Well, the one I'm looking at right now is her actually stepping on a picture of her and her husband getting married.
Right.
So I don't know. Anyway, she drank red wine from a handmade goblet with the words, finally divorced, boy, bye.
Well,
anyway, interesting ritual. I like it. But, you know, again, this is all for people to learn and get ideas about what you're going through at the end of a marriage.
Well, let's talk about the start of a marriage, or at least maybe a vow renewal. Nothing to do with vowels. Demi Moore went to Bruce Willis's vow renewal. It was in Turks and Caicos, I believe. And it's kind of interesting because, as we've heard in the tabloids, you know, Demi Moore, when she was with Ashton Kutcher, would hang out with her ex, Bruce Willis, and Emma Hemmings, who's Bruce Willis's second wife. They were all one big happy family. Now, I guess Ashton's kicked to the curb a little bit, but Demi is still hanging out with Bruce and was at the vow renewal.
That was from Refinery 29 by Catherine Lindsay.
Yes.
Some other in divorce celebrity news. Apparently, Nick Cage filed for annulment 4 days after marrying his fourth wife, Erica
Koiki? Or
maybe that's better. Yeah. Okay. Tim McGovern, the weekend editor of Hollywood Life, told us this. They had a marriage license application on March 23rd, and on March 27th, he asked for an annulment.
So. Breaking news, America. And in fact, this was on Jimmy Kimmel last night when he had the Kardashians on, live from Las Vegas. I don't know if you happened to catch that episode.
I did not catch that.
This
no.
was a headline on that show.
The Nick Cage thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, and by the way, let me ask you a question. So what is the difference between an annulment and a divorce? Because it says he has filed for an annulment
right,
from his fourth
question.
Wife.
That's a good question. So an annulment basically means that there never was a marriage. It did not happen. You are actually erasing the history of the marriage. I actually had my marriage annulled, but it's just so complicated to explain that to people.
Right.
Especially when you're photo hangs in the wedding office at the Bel Air Hotel for about 6 years after the wedding. But it just means that there was no marriage that took place. And they're not as easy to get as they used to be.
Right.
I think judicial officers are like, well, you did this. You have to have a grounds for it. Grounds could be that the person wasn't of age, if they said that they were 18 and they weren't. If you actually were not competent to get married, and some people use inebriation, being drunk, as that. But again, that's not a good enough reason. Judges will say, well, then get divorced. And if there was fraud. A lot of people think if you were married for less than a year or if you didn't consummate the marriage, but that's just not the case. There has to be a certain grounds for it. Different states have different things. Fraud could be one like, oh, he said he was a man, but he was actually a woman, and I didn't realize that when I was getting
like
married. That's pretty fraudulent. Okay. Yeah. So that's the annulment, and I don't know if his annulment was granted or not, but I guess we'll probably find out at some point.
Yeah. Moving on, we are going to talk a little bit about another TV star, Married at First Sight's Courtney Hendricks and Jason Carrion split.
These people qualify as TV stars now.
Well, you know,
wow.
They're from season one.
Drop from Nick Cage to the Married at First Sight.
They were on the premiere season of Lifetime's hit show, Married at First Sight.
Got it.
Yeah.
So how long were they married?
5 years. 5 years. They also appeared on the sequel to Married at First Sight. They're Married at First Sight the first year.
Never seen that show. Okay. And here's one that I like. Florida woman allegedly stabbed husband, then swiped on dating app as he lay dying.
Unbelievable.
Steve Helling, People Magazine. After stabbing her husband to death, this woman called the police saying her husband might have died of a heart attack and tried to clean up the bloody mess with bleach, but she was swiping right and left.
Well, she says, this is really, verbatim. This is one of the reasons why when I did reality casting, I loved Florida so much.
Florida?
Absolutely. Florida. This is what she says to the cops. We had an altercation and he stabbed himself. And I ran into the bathroom, she said, sniffling, and I tried to help him. I saw him lying in blood. When the dispatcher asked her to clarify what killed Michael, she says, a heart attack or the stabbing. Probably the stabbing triggered it. I guess I don't know.
A judge ordered that Danielle be held without bond. She's pleaded not guilty. I'm wondering if anybody, swiped on her while that was happening. This could really be the beginning of a new...
And does it say here in this People Magazine article that she pled not guilty?
Yeah.
Huh. I think that, maybe he ran into her knife.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Doubt it.
Hmm.
Finally.
Yes.
4 rules for a happy marriage, according to couples who've been together for over 20 years. And as you listeners know, we will often have people on the show to tell us about how their relationships have evolved, move on, strengthened as time went on. And so these are some of the 4 rules that we have heard from people. Oh, by the way, this was in the Zoe Report.
Yes.
By Angela Malero.
And it's got a great picture of Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick,
yes,
who are one of those super couples that have managed to stay together for many, many years.
By the way, I flew for spring break with my kids over the weekend, and we watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off,
which is a great movie.
Really, really holds up after all these years. It was
Did the kids like it?
They loved it. And, the scene where he's on the float going down Chicago and singing Dunkishen and then Twist and Shout. I'll be the shame.
You're crazy!
What do you think Ferris is gonna do?
It's gonna be a practical convenience.
Well, we sang Dunkishen all week, and they danced to it all week.
That's really adorable.
Amazing. All right, so the rules. Again, this is not from Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker. Their pictures are just in it, but one would imagine they probably have done a few of these things. Rule 1, communicate and listen. Rule 2, acknowledge goodness. I feel like we really often forget about and being appreciative and grateful for the good things as opposed to just picking out the annoying things, of which acknowledged there are many.
Plenty.
Yes, yes. Even with just a marriage of a work relationship.
But it is nice to acknowledge goodness.
If there is any. Prioritize bonding time. Make a date night. Make a sex night. Actually make that important, because sometimes we're so busy getting through the week with kids and work and whatever else that we don't make that a priority, and it's important. And finally, and the way we will end the Sunny Side Up report today, one thing that long-lasting couples seem to really be able to do a great deal of is laugh. Life and relationships can get serious, so keeping things light whenever you can is crucial. The advice I would give is to have fun with it. Don't take life so seriously to the point where it interferes with your happiness. Keep the joy and laughter in your home. Know that it's okay to peel back those layers and allow yourself to remain the person that your spouse fell in love with. Don't let life circumstances weigh you down so much that it takes away your spirit. If you can laugh at your spouse, you should do so. And if that means that you have to set little traps
around
the house.
Not when they're naked, though.
So that he or she will trip, by all means. Please do so.
And next up, Dr. Danielle Delaney, who's going to help us with finding our light and finding the ability to laugh again after tragedy.
Divorce for many is traumatic, but the legal process doesn't have to be so difficult. That's why we created It's Over Easy, which can help you and your soon-to-be ex divide your assets and debts figure out spousal support and child support, create a co-parenting schedule if you have children, and ultimately create the deal that you're going to file with the court that lays out the details of your dissolution and settlement. It's Over Easy is also the home of the Index, which anyone can use to find an array of services to support you throughout the divorce process and afterwards, including counseling. We've all heard the adage, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Well, today on Divorce Sucks, we're going to put that phrase to the test by focusing on what it really takes to heal from trauma and move on to a better tomorrow. My guest today is featured on the Index, and she's a frequent contributor to the It's Over Easy Insights blog. She's certified in crisis intervention counseling, specializing in addiction and recovery, rape crisis and spiritual counseling, and she's the author of Expect Delays, How to Reclaim Your Life and Soul After Trauma. She has expertise in the areas of adults molested as children, as well as LGBTQ issues, drug-assisted rape, and working with survivors of domestic violence. She has the distinction of being the youngest and only woman of color to own a sober companioning business in the U.S. We are honored to have you here, Dr. Danielle Delaney. Welcome to Divorce Sucks.
The honor is mine.
So, listeners, what you don't know is that I have known Danielle for a long time, and my, what do you call yourself? My plucky sidekick, Johnny Rains, has known her for even longer. Johnny and I have known each other since high school. Johnny and Danielle have known each other since junior high.
Yes.
So, we all are LA kids, and Danielle grew up here in Los Angeles in the 80s, the daughter of a doctor. Tell us a little bit about your growing up and some of the pop culture things that we, the three of us, all experienced and that were important to you.
Well, we know that Fast Times at Ridgemont High was filmed at my high school at Birmingham High. Some of it. And, of course, the Sherman Oaks Galleria.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my Galleria. God. I know. I try to turn down the Valley Girl when I'm doing public speaking, but it's always in there.
It's
always
in there.
But it was entertaining and interesting. Growing up, it was the Fresh Princess of Bel-Air.
Yes.
Just below Mulholland Drive on Calneva, and my father's still in that house. And it was interesting. It was us, the Jacksons, the Simpsons, and that was about it as far as black families in the 70s and Encino.
Well, there was the Encino, because we had our black families in Beverly Hills, too.
Beverly Hills more so, but Encino and Bel Air, we were scattered.
Right.
We were sparse.
And so what was the junior high that you guys went to together?
We went to Sepulveda Magnet.
Yes.
It was like an honors student thing, but it was busing. Oh, so boy. We didn't live in that area. So we had to go all the way deeper into the valley from the hills.
Is it in Northridge?
I don't even know
anymore. It's like as far north in the valley as you can get before you get to like Oxnard, I think.
Yeah,
it's pretty
far.
Deep.
It's far. So it was a schlep and we weren't used to it.
But it was so much fun.
It was fun.
And what's that one called now?
It was Sepulveda
Junior High.
Now it's what is it?
Sepulveda Middle School.
Oh, it's middle school. Got it.
Right.
So you graduated from high school. Then what happened?
Graduated from Birmingham, went to UCLA, and got into the acting modeling side of things.
Right.
And I loved that, but my life changed pretty sharply. I was assaulted. I was kidnapped and assaulted in my late 30s at a red carpet party by a group of men in a limousine. So I was really badly beaten and thrown from the car and raped and went through a lot. So it was a sharp turn from my acting and modeling and in front of the camera stuff. And after that, it just didn't fit me anymore.
Right.
It wasn't really where my heart was anymore. And I'd gone through treatment and didn't like the way they were doing it and thought I could do it better. And that's how I kind of segued into my career now.
So tell us about that experience, if you don't mind.
Oh, like, I don't mind.
You're at a red carpet party because we just finished Oscar week here.
Right.
And so, so you're
very
at one of these parties, modeling, acting, looking fab.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm in, you know, just ready for the whole night, red carpet event. It was a friend's birthday party, my friend who was on Baywatch, Angelica, the redhead.
Right. Okay.
And it's all in the book as well. The first chapter is called Demolition in my book. It's about my life being demolished. And I really, really just didn't expect that, of course. I was just leaving the event and, you know, maybe four or five vodka tonics in, admittedly. And it was the wrong limousine. So when you see all those cars lined up, you know, you see 20 limousines and they look the same. I thought it was her driver. I got in and they took me. And
it was
a rough night. They had me for, I'd say, 4 to 5 hours. And I begged for my life, and it explains how I knew to do that and what I did and then what the healing process was like, because it was emotional as well as physical injury, as well as just the trauma in itself of that happening.
And what did they want? What, I mean, was this just for sport? Did they take anything from you?
They did fraud on all of my accounts. So
okay.
To add insult to injury, we didn't know that for months. I had to rebuild my whole life and learning to walk again. I mean, I was thrown out of a car going about 50 miles an hour. So, and my face, there's pictures
I
in there.
I saw the pictures
in
the book.
You know.
You look better now.
Thank you so much. And I didn't know if I would. I mean, believe me, that was part of it.
Yeah.
Was looking in the mirror and screaming and thinking, why is my eyelid hanging down there? And is this going to ever be?
And you didn't know these people. This was
Didn't know them. A group of men speaking Farsi, which I was familiar with some of the language because I have a lot of friends that speak Farsi. And I was just looking for a word I could recognize and just angry. And they may have been waiting to do this to someone. I don't know. I mean, the detectives, we went over it and over it. Who was driving? How would they let that go on and hear me screaming in the back?
Right.
They tried to pull red light cameras to find, you know, evidence. It doesn't work like it does on TV. There's no Benson, no Stabler.
Right.
You know, nobody's hugging you and making it better. So it's a harsh process to go through as well as the event itself.
And so you went through a rehabilitation process physically and emotionally and thought, I got to do this. I can do this better than how it's being done.
Yes.
And I feel what these victims feel.
Yes. Yes.
And the book's out now, yes?
Yes.
Expect Delays.
Yes.
We'll go through a little bit more of that at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about how you help victims heal.
Well, I work a lot with victims of violent crime, but I also work with addiction and recovery. And the way those overlap is that everyone who has an addiction or a chemical dependency, it's never about what it's about.
Right.
So it's usually about something below the surface. For me, you know, I kept the fridge stocked with Vuv for months because I didn't want to think about what happened. And I had to move to my mother's, heal and recover there. And I didn't want to. You know, I didn't want to move in with her. I didn't want to do any of that. But people who are addicted to a substance, there's usually more going on. So I studied adults molested as children and victims of violent crime and bullying and just so many different things lead to people's chemical dependencies.
Sure.
So
to just numb or self-medicate.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what everybody wants to do. No one wants to be in their head dealing with their demons. So what I do is trot them out in the light of day and work with people one-on-one. I work with families as well as individuals. And it's sometimes it's a conflict resolution within a family. And sometimes it's one-on-one and people's issues, personal issues. So it's I think I do it better than a lot of people did for me. It took me 12 therapists before I found the one that was a fit for me for PTSD. And I'm open about that because I want people to know it's hit and miss. You know, you're going to find some that don't work well for you. And for some, I think life experience is no substitute for, or book learning is no experience for life substitute.
Right.
And I mean, life experience, pardon me. And it's something that, you know, I've studied all of this, but to live it is a whole other thing.
Well, they say everything happens for a reason. I mean, ends justifies the means. Tell us a little bit about PTSD, because I hear about it a lot, and I hear about it in my practice a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes I'm like, lady, not being able to use the credit card at Spago is not PTSD. But at the same time, everything's relative. Give us, because we hear about it in terms of military, and then we hear about it kind of just tossed around. But this is a real thing. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, you know, what qualifies and then how to actually help people identify it.
Okay. Well, I didn't know I had PTSD.
Right.
It took someone mentioning it to me. I had a desk job. I was an actress, but I also had a day job at AG Edwards at a financial place. And I couldn't sleep at night. So that's a huge sign.
Right.
Fear of everything. You know, you're just jumpy. It's hypervigilance and an easy startle response. And it can be from, you know, a bad marriage. People have emotional abuse or physical abuse or what have you in a marriage as well. And can be from someone's childhood, just experiences that are cumulative. But I really thought it was only a combat thing, a military thing. So when people said I had PTSD, I was like, what are you talking about? That's not what this is. And so those are some explanations of what it is. But also rape trauma syndrome is different than PTSD. It's similar, but it's cyclical. So it's triggered by the time of year. It's triggered by certain reminders.
Smells, songs.
For me, it was the sound of car doors locking for a while. And you got to get over that.
Right.
But the limousine, it's like a loud lock.
Right.
So for a while, it was anything like that. And people with PTSD, they're always startled that I know this, and it might resonate with someone listening. The mail and the supermarket, those are two huge things that when people have it, you really can't do those things like normal people. Well, the mail, I called it my pile of denial. It never stops. You know, the mail comes, that's why people go postal.
Right.
But the mail just keeps coming. So I had a pile. You don't really want to address things that are going on because your day-to-day life, just breathing is enough, just dealing with what you're handling inside.
Wow.
And then the supermarket.
Well, I don't want to do that. So
nobody
I
wants to do that. Yeah. But that's, I mean, all the noises. It's the cash registers. It's the overhead announcements. It's people with carts popping
babies
from all
crying.
Over. Babies crying. And just, you know, it's everything coming out of nowhere at once. So when I say that to a patient, when I'm like, you're having trouble with your mail in the supermarket, they look at me like I'm psychic.
Wow.
And like, because I lived it. Because that's not in any books. It's just you experience it.
Right.
You know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you guys listening? Those are the good. Mm-hmm. What is the fight, flight, freeze reactions?
Well,
I know this is on your website.
Right, but that's okay. I can tell you. It's fight or flight, which we're mostly, most of us are familiar with, which is your response to stress or to violence.
Right.
Is flight, which you run.
Right.
Or you fight, which is you're fighting back. And then there's freeze, which people forget about and
feel
guilty.
That's the deer in the headlights.
Yeah, the deer in the headlights. And people feel really guilty about that when they think, well, why didn't I scream? Why didn't I do anything? And I did scream. I was doing everything. So I have no guilt about freezing. But I really fought for my life. The amount of DNA under my nails, the whole thing.
Did they ever find these guys?
No.
No.
No. Mm-mm. I have to just hope karma will.
Yeah.
And that's the way I deal with it. But yeah, so fight or flight, that's the explanation of that. And then freeze is the response that people often feel really bad about. And there's no reason to. It's just, it's a natural biological response.
And you also, I know you have a sober companion
company.
Service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell us about that. I know that I've worked with these companies before, and I've with some of my celebrity, or not even celebrity clients, but clients who have addiction issues.
Right.
I don't know that all of our listeners know what a sober companion is. Will you explain for them?
I will explain, because people misunderstand. They think it's like a high-end babysitter.
Right.
And it's really not. I have to vet these people that I hire. I have to make sure they're fingerprinted and background checked and understand dual diagnosis, which is when people have co-occurring disorders and personality disorders along with addiction.
Right.
Because those all come out to play when the person's sober.
Right.
So you have to have people who are experienced and who've worked in a treatment facility. But what I do is I send them home. I send a companion home. Say you were in treatment.
Right.
Let's just pretend.
Let's pretend. I like it. Okay, yeah.
Let's pretend. And so you come out of treatment and you're going to go right back to the same people, places, and things that you were dealing with that were causing you to use or drink or whatever.
Right.
Have you. So the thing to do is then if Johnny were my sober companion for my company, I would introduce you.
Oh my God, I would definitely start drinking immediately as soon as Johnny came back.
I might have to open.
That's one of my triggers, actually, is just Johnny.
I might have to open the bottle of champagne.
You would both be fired.
Yeah,
you would both be fired immediately. You're terminated. But it's a process of finding the right fit for people. I call it, it's like being Heidi Fleiss, but for addiction.
Right.
Because if you get the wrong fit, it's not going to work.
Right.
So I really have to have the right fit for people and partner them up, pair them up. And sometimes it's for a night. It's for an event. You know, they need to go to an art show and they don't want to be the only sober person there. And they know that they'll tipple into drinking if they are. And then other times it's for months. I've had a nurse that works for me. She's amazing. And she's been with a client for 5 months who's now been sober for 2 years because of that.
Wow.
So
now,
that's what
are
that
most
is.
Of the sober companions people that have struggled with their own issues? So
many
they kind of know,
are.
They know the drill and they know how hard it can be and can maybe talk somebody off the ledge.
Yes.
Yes, I have been there.
Yes.
I know how badly you just want to slip back in, but okay.
So they're a living example, which I think I am as well. I always say I'm living proof that you can survive anything and thrive and get through it, more than just get through it, but really thrive and create a life for yourself again. And same with addiction. So I do hire people who are in recovery, but they can be in recovery from many things. Like recovery to me, when I say people in recovery, when I write an article or something, it's not always addiction.
Right.
It can be an eating disorder. It can be a bad relationship, codependent relationships, divorce, so many things we have to recover from in this life.
Now, as a sober companion, I mean, I don't want to say it's easier, but it's a different role in your office, so to speak, when you're counseling and doing placement, whatever. Mm-hmm. But now you're the sober companion and your guys are out there in the world with somebody at the art opening or wherever. How do those folks avoid crossing the line?
Which line?
The line between sober companion and buddy, or, hey, can you just cover for me this once? I really need a drink right now, and I know you're my... I mean, what happens? And there, it seems like there's a lot of gray area there.
It is. It's a slippery slope, and I always tell them, you're not in trouble, because I don't do the sober companioning,
right,
but I send people out to do it.
Right.
And I did do it, though, about a decade ago, so I remember what that's like.
Right.
And you can't be responsible for someone else's every activity. And I've had one call me and say, I had my nurse call. She said she was in the bathroom or taking a shower, and the person took off, took an Uber, went to a bar.
Oy.
And I said, well, you know, if they're in the car, let's call the police with the license plate. If they're not in the car, we've got to text them and wait for them to come home.
Can you call the police?
You can if they're driving and they're intoxicated.
Oh, they're driving.
If they're intoxicated.
Right.
But if they're not intoxicated, then they're just driving their car and they went somewhere. So we kind of have to... Each situation's different. I've had people have guns in their home. I've had people wake the companions up in the middle of the night. I've had people who want to have a relationship with the companion.
Yeah.
And male, female, female, male. Some companies only fit female with female, male with male. That doesn't always work.
Right.
Some people, I like men better than women most of the time.
Right.
So,
interesting.
You know, it's an interesting career choice. And when people do it, I let them know, you're not in trouble if this person drinks.
Right.
You
haven't
failed.
Right.
Right. So it's always harm reduction.
But they do have to disclose. There's no covering it up or sweeping it under the rug. Just this once, we have this bond of trust. Da,
no.
Da, da.
No. That we breathalyze. We UA. So we know if someone's using pills or drinking or whatnot. So
got it.
It's like living at a sober living, only you're at your own house.
Right.
And
right.
So we do have some celebrity clientele and people who just don't want someone to know that they've got this problem.
So speaking of celebrity clientele, I get this question a lot. Mm-hmm. What do you find, Danielle, are the differences between working with celebrities and working with us normal folk?
You know, it's interesting because sometimes there's more of an entitlement with my high net worth individuals or my celebrities. And sometimes it's something I really empathize, which is that they can't hide their face. They can't just go to an AA meeting. They can't do certain things and under the, you know, even under cover of darkness, someone's going to recognize them. So that's kind of the difference. And even when they come to my office to have therapy with me, I have an elevator that comes up right by my door, and I have concierge and security. So. It can be very private. People think they're just coming over. They could just as well be a friend.
Right.
But I think the confidentiality, which is across the board with everyone, it's so much harder for them.
Yeah.
It's just a lot harder for them. So I actually have a lot of empathy for that. I wouldn't want it.
At Banana Republic Factory, save big with 50 to 70% off the entire store. Plus, take an extra 50% off clearance. Stock up on dresses and polos starting at $19.99. Find your nearest store or shop online only at Banana Republic Factory.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Now on Podcast One.
Could this be a serial killer? You'd never think it could happen in a community like this.
Cold Case Files, Season 4.
The case would take several twists and turns.
I mean, you're kind of, in essence, looking for a needle in a haystack.
Based on the hit A&E television program.
Now it starts to fit.
The discovery will seal the fate of a serial killer.
So I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die.
She just screams and pleads for her life.
Get new episodes of Cold Case Files every Tuesday on Podcast One.
I'm your host, Laura Wasser, and this is Divorce Sucks. Ending a marriage and the road that leads you to that decision can be traumatic, but it's precisely and indisputably inevitable that the more relationships there are, the more relationship dissolutions there will be. That being said, whether it's a bad breakup or something else that demolishes your life as you know it, moving on from a trauma is not an easy thing to do. This is why we invited author and crisis intervention counselor Dr. Danielle Delaney to join us today. She is president, founder, and CEO of Danielle Delaney Counseling, and in addition to providing intervention services, her expertise covers the fields of addiction and recovery, aftercare, and rape crisis counseling. Today, she's helping us become more familiar with the tools you can use to move on to the next chapters. So, This is something that's always fascinated me. And I have had some clients that have done it, but I haven't really observed firsthand. Tell us about an intervention. Tell us about how that works.
Oh, okay. I will tell you. My method of intervention
is...
Let's plan Johnny's intervention. You know, I like pretending that you're the person in the hot seat. You're the target patient.
I like that, though.
He can be target patient today, hypothetically.
I like that much better than him being my sober companion. Let me just tell you, that's a much better place for him to be.
Okay, well, this is good because now you'll like this position you'll be in. If Johnny, if we needed to do an intervention for Johnny... You would be in charge. Say you would be the one that I would call, or you would call
me
and say, I have this friend.
I say, Houston, really we have a problem.
Houston, we have a problem.
And his name is Johnny.
His name is Johnny Rains, and he's troubled. And we would say, all right, well, what do you think? You know, when is a good time for your family to get together? Can you get a hold of his siblings, parents?
Johnny, would you freak out if, like, your mom came in, like, people started coming in right now? Johnny, I have something to tell you. Jeff and I have something to tell you.
No more script writing for you.
You thought I was here for a podcast, but it's actually an intervention.
It's all being revealed.
It's an intervention. But
oh my God, this makes me so happy.
Does it make you happy? I knew you'd like that.
This is a sick, sick joke. It's terrible.
We're twisted.
Twisted, yeah. Sick and twisted.
All right, so I call you, and we arrange to get the people here. Now, who's qualified to be at this intervention?
Well, that's a thing, because sometimes families will argue. They think it's a party. You know, like, well... If so-and-so's not invited, they're going to be really upset.
Right.
And then if my cousin, I'm like, no. We need to figure out which people affect this person's life and which people who say that this is affecting them, that they're using is affecting their life, is who's going to be able to reach him, who's going to be able to speak to him. So sometimes they want all the wrong people there, and I have to say, I'm going to have to clear some of these people out of here.
Right.
And it's just, you know, I'm making cuts.
How about kids?
Kids, I try to keep children out of it.
Okay.
And children, they can visit them later at most inpatient facilities.
Yes.
There's family day and all that. But this isn't time for that.
Right.
This gets ugly.
Right.
It can be really tough. It can be, you know, talking about all the ways that you've disappointed us, Johnny. but we try not to use you language. We use I language,
right.
You know? So it's, I am troubled when you blah, blah, blah.
But here's a question. Let me ask you this. So we've all seen the show Intervention.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously made for television.
Right.
It's a reality show. It's a dramatic experience.
And it's like it's never wrapped up in an hour like that.
Yeah, but that's my question.
Yeah.
How does what you do differ from what we see on that show?
Well, it takes all day. Sometimes it can take all day long. And when I leave, I usually leave with them. And so it's not an extra person like it is sometimes on the show that leaves with them. I take them in myself. I check them in with a night nurse, whether it's a rehab in Malibu, Santa Barbara, Ventura, wherever. And I like to stay involved with their treatment so that then they have an aftercare doctor to see, which is me. And then since I've brought them in, I'm usually allowed to come in and see them during treatment too. And I hope for 90 days because that's what really makes a change. But sometimes they're in and out, and they'll check out the next day. It's
because they can't. They don't have to stay in there. So you can't, like, we hear about, like, can I commit him? No. He has or she has to go of her own.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if they leave, then they leave.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It really has to be like a velvet touch, like an iron fist and velvet glove. You have to. Mine's invitational method that I can talk to them about what I think will benefit their life to do this, and how much longer do they want to stay on this hamster wheel, and just knowing. I've been there through that whole just, you know, drinking your life away and not being a normie for a while. It was just self-medicating. And there's usually something more going on. And you get family members crying, you get the person crying, and then you have the person can bolt sometimes.
Right.
So you have to, kind of decide who's going to go after them. It's not going to be me. And then
I see Johnny as a real a bolt possibility.
Wouldn't
he
run?
He's just going to get up and go.
He would run. And then I would designate that you're the one to go get him.
I'm wearing, my shoes are too high.
Your shoes are too high.
Go. He'll be back.
Neither of us can run in these shoes.
But they do look good, ladies.
So, okay. And do you have relationships with, like, all of the rehabs around town and the surrounding area? So you can call them and see if they've got, like, a bed free for that period of time or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, often the calls I get for interventions are because of family. Say you wanted to put Johnny in. We keep doing this to you. You've already decided which facility you should go to.
Okay.
So often the facility will call me and say, could you call Laura and see if you two can figure out, you know, when you can
go. How to get him here.
Yeah, so they have a relationship with me. And then I have interventionists that work for me as well. Sometimes I can't be all places. So some of the interventionists are sober companions. Some are also counselors or therapists that they're just well qualified to do this work, to help people into treatment and to also stay with them after.
So speaking of qualifications, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we mm-hmm. have people, there's divorce attorneys and then there's divorce coaches mm-hmm. and then there's mm-hmm. what kind of qualifications should listeners be looking for? Tell us yours and then say, you know, you probably have more right. than the average, but what do they at least need to have if somebody's going to hire an interventionist or sober mm-hmm. companion or whatever else? What are the qualifications?
Do you mean for addiction specifically
yes.
or do you mean for addiction. Any kind of therapy?
I think for addiction.
I think, honestly, a lot of it's going to be a vibe. It's going to be how you feel, how you connect to that okay. person. Do you feel like they're honest? And call their references. Ask people who wrote testimonials. Like, they're on my website. You can reach those people. Find out what their experience was. And I think the credentials are important. KDAC, which is, you know, nationally certified for in addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, I'm a doctor of theology and divinity, so I've studied also spirituality. It's interfaith.
Right.
So sometimes you get a family that wants faith-based, some sort of an intervention that's faith-based.
Like Beit Shuva, I think, is one of those.
Yeah, okay. Beit Shuva. So there's different ones for different types of backgrounds. And either way, you really want to have a good rapport with that person.
Right.
And you want to make sure that they went to school somewhere.
Right.
But I don't poo-poo coaching and counseling, you know, any more than as one being more qualified than the other.
Right.
Because some people, their life experience that they bring to it is invaluable.
Sure.
The fact that they know that someone's going to hide their vodka bottles in a boot.
Right.
In a closet. And I've done that before. And like, how did you know? I'm like, well, of course that's where
I
it
did.
Is. It's
right.
in the boots. Yeah. Where else would you put it? It's tall. So not the short boots, but
right.
the tall boots,
right.
like the riding boots.
Right.
Those are perfect.
Yes.
So, you know, when you have the experience, then
right.
you have the expertise. So a lot of it is being trained in it. You know, and having gone to some sort of an addiction, you know, through some courses and some schooling. But it varies depending on what you're looking for. If you're looking for therapy for addiction or if you're looking for a coach or counselor or companion.
So clearly at some point, so you had this horrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
You went through the recovery from that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you decided to help others with it.
Right.
And then at some point you decided to kind of what I call go wide.
Mm-hmm.
So, and bring that to even more people than just your direct clients. So you were doing podcast hosting and doing some film and TV consulting.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that, Danielle, and your career.
Okay. Well, when I started off getting treatment, I was going to therapy, didn't like the way they were doing it. A support group was amazing, but it was in downtown LA before they cleaned up downtown LA. So you're by the Staples Center.
Did they clean up downtown LA?
You know, more than they did. There's restaurants and galleries and, you know, people
right.
love it. But at night, if you're a woman at a rape crisis group and you're leaving, and it's a
real
Staples
test,
Center,
right?
Yeah, you're just trying to get to your car, and there's people dressed as mascots, and
right.
you know, it's by a game.
When you get raped on your
yeah.
way out of the rape
exactly.
crisis meeting, that's a total
not
bummer.
What you're yeah. looking for, not what you're looking for. And I was kind of starting to take over. You know, I was saying, okay, you guys are going to walk two by two to your car. Well, what if there's three of us? I was like, well, then two of you drive the other one.
Right.
You get
right.
it together. But they didn't have security to drive people or to do whatever. So I started kind of telling people what to do, and then people were coming in complaining about what neighbors or friends had said to them because people are insensitive. They
right.
just haven't experienced it.
Right.
And they have little experience dealing with someone who's gone through this. So I wrote about that in the book, that you have to give people, you just have to give them benefit of the doubt,
right.
that it's their limitation. You have to just kind of understand their limitations. So they say stupid things to you. So women would come into this group and talking about it and crying. And I'd say, why don't we write down a list of stupid things people said to you this week so that we can talk about it
right.
and realize that they're doing the best they can. Your sister didn't mean to say that.
Right.
Or your brother, your husband, whomever. But they'll say things like, well, aren't you better by now? Or, you know, whatever.
Right. People
and
are morons.
They don't understand.
Yeah.
People are morons. And so it's understanding that but accepting it because it's going to go on all
sure.
the time. So I felt like I could do a better job of helping people do what they're doing. And I certainly wouldn't have a support group where it's scary to walk to your car
right.
or I'd have someone walk them. But I went to speak at to a speak out event at, Long Beach, University of Long Beach. And so I went and I got up to speak because nobody was getting up. And I felt bad for the people who put on the event. They made T-shirts and
right.
cake. And I thought, somebody get up. So I got up and spoke about my experience. And afterwards, the people putting on the event said, you know, we really think that you should do this. So it started to snowball. And I was already, you know, had my psych degree.
Right.
But I sort of segued into going to school for rape crisis and for trauma. And they teach you when you're in school for that, you better show up. It's at some hospital across a bridge in San Pedro, but you better be here. And if you get a flat tire, you better have a bicycle in your trunk.
Wow.
Because if you're not on time for crisis things like that, you're not right for that business.
Right.
And you can't miss a day or you don't get your certifications in crisis and trauma. So it's intense. And
wow.
You're holding hands of rape victims and you're really in the trenches. And then you're doing suicide and rape hotlines. And it's a lot of work for years to get that kind of licensing and certification. But knowing that you really better be there, you better show up,
right.
And you better be present,
right.
And understanding of what's going on. That's a huge part of it.
And the podcast?
The podcast was called The Real Deal with Dr. Danielle Delaney, and it was on Voice America for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You can still listen to the shows if you want to. Just Google The Real Deal with Danielle Delaney. It'll come up. And it's also on my website, DanielleDelaneyCounseling.com. There's links. And I did everything from breast implant disease to body image to Lou Gossett Jr. came on to talk about his foundation, Eracism Foundation. Todd Bridges was on about being molested as a child actor.
I had
all different topics. It was fun.
So, and we'll get to your consulting stuff in a minute on mm-hmm. TV and film. But I wanted to ask you, because we did say that you have the distinction of being one of the only women of color to have a sober companion agency.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know of many women or men of color that are kind of in this field.
There really aren't.
Why is that?
I kind of stand out like a spot. And then when there's a photograph of these big industry things for the addiction and recovery industry. I don't know. And I think some of it is socioeconomical.
Mm-hmm.
I think, it's just, I don't even have a lot of patients of color. I don't have a lot of Jewish patients either. So, and I'm part everything.
Right.
I'm kind of a hybrid of a lot of things. But I've noticed that, and it's interesting. But I think I am, as far as I know, I'm still the only woman of color and the youngest who owns a sober companioning company in the United States. And I felt like that was necessary. Just people need to relate to me that aren't the usual,
right.
Usual demographic. Exactly.
All right. Tell us about some of your consulting stuff, because I always think this is interesting. Like, is it how we see it on TV? So you worked on Dexter and you worked on Y&R,
right? I worked with Jennifer Carpenter on Dexter. She was actually my neighbor.
Okay.
And she knew what had happened to me because she saw my face.
Right.
She saw the aftermath of what happened to me. We lived in these little cottages by the Directors Guild that are really quaint. So I'd sit outside and be miserable with my champagne or whatever. So she knew what was going on. So when she booked that part, she hired me specifically to help her show and to show how PTSD would present if you're living it. And I didn't know why until I saw the show and
right.
I realized what that character goes through. She's
right.
the sibling of Dexter on the show.
Right.
And so you teach them. You talk to them. You teach them. So it's teaching an actor or an actress how something presents, how a mental condition would present.
And I'm assuming that in your work, you also work with people that are victims of domestic violence.
Yes.
And that kind of trauma, which is ties a lot into what we do here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. Tell us about how those women and men will kind of go through the different machinations of defending their abuser
mm-hmm.
and denial about mm-hmm. what's going on and protecting.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of it's PTSD, and that's post-traumatic stress disorder. For people that don't know what those initials stand for, post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD can be syndrome. But it's in domestic violence, there's that battered woman syndrome. You know what that is, and it can be men as well. Just like rape crisis can be men as well. I have male clients as well for that. But it's a vicious cycle, and people not being able to leave and also emotionally being connected and unable to leave. So it's they're captive in that relationship, and they're captive as a victim, and it's letting them know they can become a survivor of this and not be a statistic, because we know where that can end. It's death.
Yes.
So it's important.
Well, and as we've discussed many times on the show, domestic violence is the one thing that kind of disqualifies you from using It's Over Easy in a lot of instances
mm-hmm.
because that's generally couples that are not able to have an uncontested divorce. If there's domestic violence going on in your relationship, you really do need to reach out to the authorities, to some kind of a crisis center. That
mm-hmm.
needs to stop. That's going to be the one also preclusion from having what we generally see, at least in California, as equal child custody.
Mm-hmm.
If you're beating the shit out of your spouse or your kids, not so much going to be getting 50-50 custody.
No,
so
they shouldn't be.
And I mean, this is a big ticket item. And as we've discussed, that kind of ability to reach out and have somebody to talk to get you through that
mm-hmm.
is huge. So, Danielle, let's talk about something that's very, very in the moment. Jussie Smollett. I mean, this is somebody who evidently, allegedly staged a very violent attack on himself for his own personal and financial motivations. And I mean, I just wrote an article called The Power of the Allegation, because we are seeing in family law cases a real rise in domestic violence allegations driven by people who are trying to achieve greater either economic or custodial benefits. It's disgusting to be a perpetrator of domestic violence, but it's almost equally disgusting to be somebody who accuses an innocent person of domestic violence or uses their victimhood, false victimhood, to their benefit. Thoughts?
Ugh is first. I mean, if that can just speak volumes, just the ugh is so deep. I defended him to so many people who would say, what was he doing out at that hour? Because that feeds into, you know, rape culture.
Why was she wearing that?
What did she expect? Right. And I always have to say, it's not what you drank. It's not what you wore. Believe me, I was in like a little corset. And I was, like I said, vodka tonics, the whole thing. It has nothing to do with you. You blame the perpetrator and the perpetrator only. But to blame perpetrators that weren't there or that were there but weren't
or
white.
Getting paid.
They were Nigerian, not white, which is like the complete opposite spectrum. And, you know, it's just been really hard to watch. And it's very triggering as well. I've had clients who were triggered by it. I have to admit I was triggered by it, because you've seen what I looked like. And when people would say, he didn't look that beat up, I would say, hey, you know, there's no qualifying what's enough of an assault.
Right.
Because I really was. But he didn't look that beat up. And so people sort of made their decision about whether it happened or not. And I was so angry also that people were even doubting his word.
Right.
I thought, why? Because he's gay? Because he's black? Because he's an actor? Because why? Why are you doubting him? So I was honestly just in his corner. And now, ugh.
Yeah. It's bad. And it sets back, I think, the movement. I mean, it just... Every movement.
Victims of violent crime, black men, gay people, people of color, all sorts of people who are victimized and marginalized. And it's just, it's gross.
Yeah.
To sum up the story of Jussie Smollett, he accused two men of assaulting him in the middle of the street or late at night, 2 a.m. in Chicago with below zero weather. And putting a noose around his neck, which is such a racially charged thing to do, terrifying, and pouring bleach on him. Ugh. Which, when I first heard that, I thought he must have been terrified. He must have thought they were going to set him on fire. What if it was gasoline? I couldn't sleep when I heard this story. So now I'm mad that I lost sleep.
Yes.
Because I like sleep. And I lost sleep over this. And if it's all a lie, ugh, and it's looking like it. I mean, I can't really even say it's looking like it at this point.
Yeah.
It's just bad.
Really bad.
It's just bad. And you know, it also makes me wonder why I was so immediately in his corner. But I always
am a victim
of violent crime.
Yeah. And because who would think that somebody would? I mean, this isn't even like, oh, I'm going to get divorced and I'm worried that I won't get enough support, or I'm worried that my ex is going to have more time with my kids. All inexcusable to make up or fake violence. But this is like, you weren't getting enough money in your empire, you know, checks?
I know, and he's so talented. I only watched the first few episodes, but I remember thinking he was so talented, and I liked his cute little face, and now I think it's a smug little face. Like, it changed in my brain.
I think that you better remember that face, because you ain't going to be seen on TV anymore.
Not anymore. Ugh.
Our producer, Jeff, just came in and said one of the things that really bothers him about this is so many people now taking the opportunity to go, see, these people are all liars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, that's not the case. In fact, very few people would lie about this or make it up. And as Jeff pointed out, the truth comes out. And so somebody's going to make up an allegation, generally the truth will unwind like it did here, and we will figure that out. So let's give these victims the benefit of the doubt and assume that it happened.
Yes,
why would anyone lie about that?
There are hate crimes all the time, and there are people being lynched and hung, and people are losing their sons. Horrible things are happening.
Yes.
But not to Jussie.
Not to Jussie. Danielle has been an amazing contributor to the It's Over Easy Insights blog. She's written two articles for us already. One is Navigating Loneliness and Life Stage Transitions. What's that one about?
That one was a holiday one that I wrote, because so many people really identified with that one, including myself. If you don't, if you're not a member of a conventional family,
right.
I'm from a divorced family, divorced after 30 years. Thank you, my parents.
Wow.
So that was gnarly, gnarly divorce, really bad. And so it's, you know, deciding which parent to see, the whole thing, and just how, what a loaded statement it is when people are asking, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? What are you doing for New Year's? And that not everybody has the you know, the cut and dried answer to that. And that most people, really more than not, don't have that Norman Rockwell family existence. Right. And they're from a family, from divorced families or some sort of estrangement going on with siblings or a parent, or they've had a loss recently. Or what if you've recently gone through a breakup or a divorce and it's your first holiday dealing? It's just like, it, turn the knife a little bit, pour some salt on that wound. It just doesn't help. So that's what I was writing about at the holidays. And I thought that one was interesting.
And then this one I should probably read. Self-awareness in the age of instant gratification. Right, Johnny? Tell us about this one.
That one, oh, it's just so timely. And I wrote that because everyone is so caught up in the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm in a high rise, so I look down and everyone is walking around
with
looking
their
down.
Face in their phone.
Their faces in their phone. And it used to be that you'd see people as you're walking down the street. You know, you run into people at a restaurant. The minute someone gets up from a table, people are back in their phone.
Right.
And sometimes they're on their phone and they're together. I've seen people holding hands and they're on their phone. So it's about taking control of your device so it doesn't control you. You can put your texts on silent. Mine are on silent unless I'm on my way to you. And so it's on, so I can communicate. Otherwise, I don't need to know what you have to say right now.
Right.
I can look at it when I look at it. And it's not like I don't look at it enough. I don't need it pinging and pulling at me all the time. And I'm working. So it's about people really being self-aware and not continuing to let it run their life.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
I agree. I'm so guilty of it, though. I'm such a perpetrator.
Well, now you'll be self-aware this week.
Maybe. Well, maybe for the next hour we have it.
20 minutes. Give you 20 minutes.
Tell us about your next book. I love the title.
You do?
Yes. Tell us.
Okay. Say the title of the next book.
The title is Don't Call Me Crying From Your Bentley.
That's right. And there's a reason for that title. I actually had an afternoon where three clients and a friend all called, and they don't say car after they have a Bentley. They won't say car. It's like getting the Bentley washed. I'm the Bentley.
Like, My dad has a Bentley.
My dad has a Bentley.
Says that
it's a blue one.
Right.
He says, I'm taking in the Bentley. I'm like, Dad, I know what you drive.
Right.
Dad. You don't have to. Why are you trying to impress me? I don't care. So it's, and the other one, he has a Mercedes, but he never says the Mercedes. It's just the Bentley. So these patients, clients, whatever you want to call them, called me crying from their Bentley. And by call number three of someone saying, I'm in the Bentley and I need to talk, I was like, look, don't call me crying from your Bentley. Why don't you go home and we can do a phone session, or come in here where we can have a real session face to face where it's safe and you're not in the Bentley crying.
Right. I think Bentley should figure out a way to get you to do an ad for them. This is actually really good.
Don't call me crying from your Bentley. So one of the clients is a comedian and an actress, and she just laughed and said, that should be the title of your next book. And I said, done.
I love
it. I've been working on that one, and it's about a lot of my interactions with my clients and what my clientele is like, and some of it's funny and some of it's heartbreaking, and all of the names are changed to protect the not so innocent.
When can we expect this?
2020.
Okay. And there's a line of candles.
They're recovery industry candles, but like I said, recovery is anything, whether it's from relationships. I have one that the scent is Divorce Detox.
Oh, I like that.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I have some that are No Fighting, No Biting. I was burning that in a couple session because they tend to argue. So
right. Right.
And it's like, you need to take a walk. You need to sit down. So it can be a situation. So my clients were noticing the smell of fig and amber and coconut and that it was very zen.
Right.
And I realized, you know, I'm going to start marketing these. So it's a fun thing to do.
I like to have
my creative soul doing things as well as my business.
Where can we find those?
Those aren't out yet.
Those are
2020
We have to come to your office.
Yes. Okay. Well, you'll get a divorce detox candle for your desk.
Thank you.
Of course.
All right. One of the reasons people tune into the Divorce Sucks podcast is to learn about family law, and we wouldn't want to disappoint anyone, never. audience, your lesson for today is relevant to the discovery phase of litigation and concerns interrogatories, which are an integral tool used by attorneys during discovery to request information from one party or another. So, Danielle, are you ready for the Divorce Sucks interrogatories?
Interrogatories.
Yes.
Okay. Interrogate me, Laura.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I may plead the fifth, but yes, so help me God.
Okay. Are you married, divorced, or single?
None of the above. I consider it taken.
Okay.
I am taken with him. He's taken with me. And it has been several years. So
nice.
Taken.
I'm taken, too.
Off
I like
the market.
That. I'm going to say that now,
taken.
Too. All right. And what's your favorite breakup song?
Oh, I Will Survive.
Gloria Gaynor.
Right?
Yes.
Gloria Gaynor. I have two. I have two. How about The Warrior?
Yes.
Scandal, like Patti Smythe.
Yes.
Shooting at the Walls
one.
Of Heartache.
Yes.
That's the good one.
That's
mm-hmm.
a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to cheer up a friend, not necessarily a client or patient, it may be the same, mm-hmm. but a friend that's going through a breakup?
I would say better to have loved and lost than to have lived with a psychopath the rest of your life.
I think I have a button that says
I have a magnet. Sadly, I gave it to my mother during her divorce. But yes.
Mm-hmm. And which rom-com could you watch on repeat?
Some Kind of Wonderful.
Love.
Eric Stoltz.
Love.
Yes. The earrings,
the drumming, yes.
All of it. The painting of her, just Some Kind of Wonderful.
That's a good one. That's
over
a good one for
over.
Our age.
Any
I love
day.
It.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, here's another tidbit of legal information for you listeners out there in regard to divorce. If you and your spouse can agree ahead of time on such basics as custody and support, you can lower your legal fees significantly. Remember, the more acrimony, argument, and angst, the more money your attorney makes. The author, interventionist, and crisis counselor, Dr. Danielle Delaney, is our guest today. Danielle, thank you so much for joining us on Divorce Sucks. Thank you for the autographed copy of your must-read book, Expect Delays. Folks, you can win this by following us at It's Over Easy and telling us why you want to read it. Please tell people how we can stay up to date with you and where to find you on social media.
Well, you can find me all over social media. First, my website is DanielleDelaneyCounseling.com.
Okay.
My Instagram is at Danny Delaney. That's DanniDelaney. And my Twitter is at It's Danny Delaney. So you can find me on all of those and also Facebook. Let's see, Facebook.com, Danielle.Delaney, LinkedIn. I'm on all of that stuff.
Check her out. We appreciate you guys listening and we want your feedback. So please tap review and share your thoughts about today's episode of Divorce Sucks before or after you hit 5 stars. I'm Laura Wasser. I'm looking forward to chatting again with you next week. Dr. Delaney, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
At Banana Republic Factory, save big with 50 to 70% off the entire store. Plus, take an extra 50% off clearance. Stock up on dresses and polos starting at $19.99. Find your nearest store or shop online only at Banana Republic Factory.
I'm Rita Foley with an AP News Minute. The thinking at the moment is that renovation work may have led to the fire at the almost 900-year-old Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. This morning, one of the companies hired to do that work says they want more than anyone to know what happened. The cathedral is now a shell, its roof and its iconic spire gone. Now they're trying to make sure that what's left standing is structurally sound. AP correspondent Angela Charlton is in Paris.
Another thing they're looking at is the damage to all of the precious artworks and relics that were held inside Notre Dame, and things like its organ, which is world famous, and its stained glass windows, notably to see if any of the frame or any of the glass in these windows has been damaged.
The city's deputy mayor for tourism, Jean-François Martin, says the French will rebuild.
We will rise up again and build it again, and we'll show that even in our sadness, we can rebound.
Donors are already giving to the campaign to rebuild the cathedral. I'm Rita Foley.